On CNBC this morning, President Donald Trump continued to insist that he was tough on Russian President Vladimir Putin when they met face-to-face in Helsinki on Monday. And he said that he did not capitulate to Putin about Russian election interference in the news conference that had followed.
I mean, I had some of these fools from the media saying, why didn't you stand there, look him in the face, walk over to him, and start shouting at him? I said, is these people crazy? I want to make a deal.
Three times this week, Trump had to walk back conciliatory statements he made to Putin at their summit on Monday. Those statements stunned Washington observers, some of whom called his remarks in Helsinki treason and the worst mistake of his presidency.
So let's bring in our Friday roundtable. Chad Pergram covers Congress for Fox News. Hi, Chad.
Hey.
And Jose Diaz-Balart is a news anchor for Telemundo. Hi, Jose.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, and it has been a week of surprises from the White House, but perhaps the biggest one came yesterday for Trump's own Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, who was caught off guard by Trump's announcement on Twitter that he's invited Putin to the White House this fall. This is an incredible moment. This is NBC's Andrea Mitchell breaking the news to Coats on stage in Aspen at a forum.
Say that again.
You... Vladimir Putin coming
to the... Did I hear
you? Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
That's going to be special. Jose, how damaging was this week to the Trump presidency?
Boy, just that soundbite. I mean, think about that. That's the Director of National Intelligence.
Right. You're supposed to know things before the rest of us when you're in that
job. No idea that the president of Russia had been invited to come to Washington, D.C. I guess if it's a decision that the president took, you know, as he apparently does often, just almost immediately without consulting with anybody else, then this would be, I guess, part of the way the president leads. But it is extraordinary, remarkable that the Director of National Intelligence, you know, would have been told by my colleague and dear friend Andrew Mitchell in a public open forum that, the president had invited the president of Russia over. I mean, it's extraordinary. And I think it shows it's kind of like a pattern that we've seen over these last 3 to 4 days since the Helsinki meeting. It just seems like, some things aren't really thought out.
Yeah. You know, and Andrea Mitchell found out via Twitter. So that means she, along with the rest of the world, found out all together, including Dan Coats. I mean, Chad, I'm going to ask you how Congress is reacting to all this. But let's hear a little bit from Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who was asked yesterday what his confidence level is on the president.
I think he's done a lot of good things. I think when it comes to Russia, it's been a bad week. And I think it's imperative that he understand that he's misjudging Putin. I don't think he was prepared as well as he should have been.
So, Chad, how are members of Congress reacting to this idea of Vladimir Putin coming to the White House?
Well, not well at all. I mean, this is something that we do know that, Vladimir Putin will not come to the U.S. Capitol. He will not be invited here. And members of Congress, especially on the right, are sort of like, well, here we go again. And it's probably going to change in 5 seconds. At the end of the day, what this really represents is that President Trump is his own Director of National Intelligence. Mm-hmm. He is his own communications director. He is his own CIA director. I mean, he doesn't consult with folks the way, a lot of presidents did before him. Usually when you would have a summit like this with the Russian leader, the Soviet leader, and then want to do something else, you would usually have a conclave of some sort where you would game this out and say, what did we discuss? What did we learn? And that's why all eyes are going to be on a hearing coming next Wednesday afternoon before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is going to be up here, and that may be the biggest moment yet on Capitol Hill in relation to what was said in Helsinki last week.
Well, Chad, so good point, because I was just about to ask you, I mean, the whole I alone can solve it presidency that Donald Trump's presidency seems to be may work in a dictatorship, but we have co-equal branches of government here. I mean, what are especially Republican congressmen telling you about, how far they're willing to go, what actions they are willing to take?
That's why Democrats were beside themselves this week when Republicans in the House blocked them from adding money for election security. The House of Representatives is going to go away for about 5 weeks at the end of next week, and there's nothing on the radar to fix that. consider again how many times that Republicans in Congress have been willing to kind of grimace and make some pronouncements, but then let this go. I mean, a good example of this is Orrin Hatch from Utah. Mm-hmm. He's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. The Finance Committee deals with tariffs. Bob Corker, a Republican senator from Tennessee, has been trying to get an actual binding vote dealing with tariffs to say, okay, you can't just impose tariffs on national security grounds without consulting Congress. He did get a non-binding vote on this in the past couple of days. But at the end of the day, members of Congress like Orrin Hatch are like, you know, this is really bad. We don't like this. I've talked to some Midwest farm state Republicans mm-hmm. who right. have told me that, you know, their farmers don't like the tariffs, but they like Trump more. So they are willing to put their economic, wherewithal on the line, even though it flies in the face of what's good for them, just right. because they like Trump more.
Now, on the issue of the meeting in Helsinki, I have heard some reporting that it's possible that the Russians actually recorded it. I'm wondering if we're going to eventually get a recording of what happened in that room. Of course, Mike Pompeo was not in that room with Trump and Putin during that. But there is a tape that we are now finding out about that is not about Russia at all, perhaps. The New York Times is reporting today that former Trump attorney Michael Cohen secretly recorded Trump 2 months before the presidential election talking about payments to a former Playboy model, Karen McDougal, who claimed to have an affair with Trump in 2006. Jose, when you hear that, what's the significance of it, do you think?
Well, what's interesting is that already the president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has already kind of put spin on it and reacted to it, saying that, you know, yeah, they talked about it, but they decided not to do it at the time. And I'm quoting Giuliani here. Nothing in that conversation suggests that he had any knowledge of it in advance. So, look, this is just more of, you know, things, politics in a different world. Trump is not a politician, and he certainly proves that on a daily basis.
And if I can jump in here, yeah. what this represents with Cohen is that he is the keeper of the Trump secrets. It's why mm-hmm. he's such an important potential witness in the Mueller investigation mm-hmm. or into other inquiries, because he was always present at the creation of all these things. He was Trump's right-hand man. We don't know the veracity of this report. It's just come out in the past few minutes. But that is demonstrative of the importance and the centrality of Cohen.
Well, let's move on to more discussion about the president and the economy, because, again, on CNBC this morning, the president indicated that he's willing to put tariffs on every Chinese import into the United States. And he also took the highly unusual move of criticizing the Fed, supposed to be an independent agency. The president did not like the fact that the Fed wants to raise interest rates as the economy is looking up.
I'm not thrilled because, you know, we go up, and every time you go up, they want to raise rates again. And I don't really, I am not happy about it. But at the same time, I'm letting them do what they feel is best.
Chad, what do you make of that?
Well, again, here we have the economy issue where people are saying, wait a minute, this isn't good. They thought that they would get a lot of benefit of the polls with tax reform. We've seen some economic movement there, but whether or not that resonates. And again, it will be interesting to see just how voters respond. You know, midterm elections are usually about the president. They're a referendum on the president. But for the Democrats to kind of hack through on any issue, whether it be economic or health care or whatever else, and say, look, over here, their message, and they've tried a couple, they rolled out another one this week, just can't, get that level of attention.
Yeah.
Jose, we have to talk about an important issue that I want to keep bringing into these conversations because I don't want to lose sight of what's going on here. NBC is reporting that the Trump administration, which is facing a Tuesday deadline, has only been able to reunify 364 yeah. of the more than 2,500 migrant children that were separated from their parents at the Mexican border because of the zero tolerance policy from the administration. What's going to happen here? Are we going to come back in a week, 2 weeks, a month, and find out that still many of them haven't been reunited with their parents?
Probably. You know, yesterday we led in Telemundo Nightly News with a story about some of these parents that are, you know, still grieving, having their children ripped away from them as they've come to ask for asylum. In other words, they did what legally you can do. You can come to the United States and ask for asylum. Are now being told by the different places that they go and talk to officials that they have to pay for the airfare and the transportation costs for these kids to be reunited with them. So, whether it's true as a government policy or not, there are some of these places, some of these places where these children are being held are private privately run. Mm-hmm. They're being told that, so, yeah, we took the children away from you. If you want them back, and if you're in Texas, the kids may be in Connecticut, you've got to pay for their transportation.
And Jose, here's the interesting thing, too. I talked about the congressional schedule. The House is going to be out at the end of next week. The Senate's going to be in some in August. But there is almost zero appetite nor bandwidth to go back and address immigration or the family separation policy at all before September, which means it probably doesn't get addressed at all this Congress. I had a lengthy conversation yesterday off the record with a Republican who is very involved in this issue. And they said, why should we get involved? We don't have there's no way we can pass anything.
Wow.
True, but there's nothing to pass, maybe. And you know, the different proposals that have been talked about in the House are still languishing. But meanwhile, you've got hundreds of children that are still without their parents.
We have to leave it right there. Thanks to both of you.